Hello, storytellers and creatives. And this is episode number 9, season 1 of the Write Script Reviews. And today we're going to be picking up where we left off with The Handmaid's Tale. And this is season 1, episode 2, Birthday. And if you guys remember my last podcast on The Handmaid's Tale, oh my God, never in life has a TV series put me on edge from the beginning all the way to the very end of each episode. And I'm not exaggerating. For those of you who have never seen the show, who have never even watched the pilot, I am telling you, the pilot will keep you on edge. You'll be feeling all these emotions from anger to outrage to fear to uncertainty. It's just crazy. And for those of you who don't remember what it's about, the premise of the whole show is about a religious extremist group that takes over the United States. And when I say extremist, I mean extremist, as in women are not allowed to have fun anymore. And by have fun, I mean they're not even considered human beings. They're baby machines, pretty much, for the elite, for women who can't have children. The wives of commanders, they're the ones that have to go through the painful labor only to give up those babies to the elite. So really, it's all for the quote unquote greater good, but who's really winning here? Not the handmaids, not even the wives. I wouldn't even say the commanders are really winning. Nobody's winning. People are just doing what the rules are so they don't get penalized. That's really all it is. In the beginning, we're able to really see Offred, who's the main character, who's a handmaid. And she's reminiscing on her old life, and she's like, Blue Moon, Rhapsody in Blue. Our car was that color. We bought it off Craigslist. It smelled like maple syrup. Luke said it was a leak in the radiator. It was probably bad for kids. After we got it fixed, I missed that smell. So did Hannah. She said it smelled like Saturdays. And we see why Offred is going down memory lane. Because if you guys remember, before the religious extremist group took over, she was June, a regular woman, a mother, a wife. Her little girl's name is Hannah. Her late husband's name was Luke, and they were happy. They were just a normal, everyday family, just living life. And we see that this is what Offred thinks about to ease the pain when she's being used as a baby machine by Serena Joy and the commander. And it's really the only thing that keeps her going. And you can just tell by Offred's facial expression that she just wants this whole thing to be over. It's the worst moment when you have to pretty much give up your body for the greater good, and you're looked at as nothing more than, like I said, a baby machine. And she's looking up at the commander, and there's no emotion in this. It's all just going through the motions. And of course, Serena Joy is there, and surprisingly, she resents Offred for this, but in reality, it's not a picnic for Offred. It's really not a picnic for Offred because she's the baby machine. Serena Joy, I mean, it's not a picnic for her either because she has to watch her husband with another woman. You know, she has to watch her husband and another woman conceive. So it's really not a picnic for anybody. If you ask me with Serena Joy, it's a lot of displaced anger, and you can just tell in her interactions with Offred that it's a lot of hatred, resentment. But Offred didn't make the rules, neither did the other handmaids. If it was up to them, they'd all be free. If it was up to them, None of this would even be happening. And then we see Offred and Ofglen, and they're doing their usual shopping walk and all that kind of stuff, and they're like, oh, blessed be the fruit, may the Lord open under his eye. And then they end up taking the long way home to talk, because remember, at the end of the pilot episode, Ofglen revealed to Offred, like, hey, there's an eye in your house, be very careful. And that was a great way to end it on a high note, because now Offred doesn't know who she should trust in that house. Is the commander the eye? Is Nick the eye? What about one of the Marthas? Are they eyes? Is it another handmaid that's an eye? What about Serena Joy? Is she an eye? It could be anybody. And Offred and Ofglen use this time to bond, and they talk about their old lives and the past before this whole religious extremist movement. And Ofglen reveals that when things were normal, she was a college professor, and Offred is taken aback because she's like, wow, I thought all the college professors were sent to the colonies. And Ofglen was like, well, I have two very good ovaries, so they were kind enough to overlook my sinful past. Lucky me. And then they see St. Paul's Church being torn down, and for Offred, it's a sore spot because it was her dad's parish and Hannah was baptized there. And they're literally erasing everything. And Offred finally asks Ofglen the million-dollar question, how do you know there's an eye in my house? And before she can answer, a huge van approaches them. Two men get out, and they automatically know it's no longer safe to talk. They grab an unsuspecting man and haul him into the van. And Ofglen and Offred are watching this unfold, and, you know, they're on pins and needles because they're thinking, oh my God, they're here to take us away. But they weren't. They were after that man the whole time. And on the way home, Offred is clearly, you know, traumatized, she's scared, she doesn't even know how to react, and Ofglen is like, it's okay, you know, to be relieved it wasn't you. And Offred is like, yeah, but it was someone. And this really says a lot about Offred's character, that she has a big heart, and she's not the type of person that will be like, oh, well, better them than me. She's looking at it like, no, even though it wasn't me, I'm still sorry for them. And that says a lot, and that also makes her very likable as a character and as a protagonist. And then Ofglen brings up a secret. She's like, you know, there's a way to help them. You can join us. There's a network. And Offred is like, oh no, I'm not that kind of person. And Ofglen is like, no one is, until they have to be. Waterford is important. He's very high up. You should find out and tell us. And Offred's like, find out what? And Ofglen is like, anything. Find out anything. Just don't say a word. And then we hear Offred's voiceover, and she's like, there is an us. It seems imaginary, like secrets in the fifth grade. People with mysterious histories and dark lineages. It doesn't seem as if it should be the true shape of the world. That's the hangover from the extinct reality. Now Anchorage is the capital of what's left of the United States. Now darkness is everywhere. Now there has to be an us, because now there is a them. And then we see the commander's driver, Nick, and he's watching Offred like he knows something. And he could very well be the eye, but we don't know. But the fact that these little scenes are showing him watching her every move, it creates a good amount of suspense, dramatic tension, conflict, and uncertainty, which hooks the audience in even further. And Offred accidentally says too much to Nick. She's like, oh yeah, you know, sometimes me and Ofglen walk home by the river. And Nick looks at her like, what? And she realizes that she said too much. And then Nick is like, you need to be careful with her. And Offred's like, You mean Afglin? She's my partner. We shop together. And Nick is like, don't get too close to her. It's dangerous. And then he drops a bombshell on her and says he wants to see you, the commander, tonight in his office, 9 p.m. Don't be late. And then we're back to Offred's voiceover, and she reveals that it's forbidden for handmaids to be alone with the commander. So we already know now that what the commander is asking of her is unusual, unless you're in trouble or unless it's some other thing that they want off the radar. And Offred goes off to say, we aren't concubines, we are two-legged wombs. Maybe he knows about Ofglen. Have I been invited to my own ending? No, it wasn't an invitation. I can't send my regrets. Then it's time for Offred to go to the birthmobile, and this is where we learn how the handmaids are shuttled back and forth. They're going to see Janine give birth to a baby for another commander and his wife. And when I tell you guys, that whole scene was just intense. Like, I tried to put little screenwriting lessons in there, but I'm gonna be a viewer for a second. The whole time I was watching that, I was just like, what in the actual? Like, I was just like, am I in the Twilight Zone? The last thing I want as a woman giving birth is to be around a bunch of women, like not even one or two women, a whole crowd of women saying, exhale, exhale, breathe, breathe, push, push. Oh my God. Like, I would have cussed them smooth out. I'm just saying, you guys, like, this is just me being real. They would have had to slap me silly. They would have had to kill me. They would have had to torture me. They would have had to send me to the colony. I am just saying, like, could not have been me. Oh my God, could not have been me. For one, I have a low tolerance for pain anyway, so that really couldn't have been me. But the added thing of them just watching my every move, saying, ooh, you should be proud. Proud of what? To be a baby machine? Like, when I tell you this show is just, whew, like, this show, I have no words. But anyway, back to my commentary. I just had to get that off. We see a flashback to June's old life with Luke, and she's in labor with Hannah, and they're on their way to the hospital. And it's weird because they get to the hospital and there's a group of protesters outside, and this begs the question, what the hell are they protesting? Is this group that's outside the hospital protesting part of a religious extremist group, the same group that June, aka Offred, is in now? Was this a foreshadowing of what's to come? It seems that way, and the way they did it was so clever. It wasn't a long, drawn-out flashback. It was just enough to get the audience to ask questions and piece everything together like a puzzle. And then we see the girls sent to the big house, aka the birthing center, and Offred's voiceover comes in once again, and she says, there's a smell coming from that room. Something primal. It's the smell of dens, of inhabited caves. It's the smell of the plaid blanket on the bed where the cat gave birth once before she was spayed. It's the smell of Genesis. And like I said before, you guys, in my little rant, this whole birthing center, it's so like creepy. It's like cult-like and ritualistic. A bunch of women, like, hold. Hold, exhale, exhale, breathe. And we see Janine, and oh my God, poor Janine, like one-eyed Janine giving birth. And Janine is like at her breaking point. And you have to remember, this religious extremist group, when I tell you they're extreme, they don't believe in any form of epidural. They don't believe in anything to ease the pain. They believe you should feel everything, and that if you have anything to ease the pain, it's a sin, quote unquote. Like, I mean, woo, like they take it to the extreme. And then we see the flashback with June giving birth to Hannah, and then the nurse comes in and takes June to the, I guess, the NICU where she can give Hannah her first bath. And what's weird in the flashback is that normally when you go to the NICU, you see other babies in there. There were no babies in there. None of the babies are in there, and that's weird. And Hannah even picked, not Hannah, June even picks up on it, and she's like, "Where are all the other babies?" And the nurse is like, "Oh, we had a rough night. Two went to the ICU, and the others are with God." And okay, the fact that she said, "And the others are with God," is that nurse somehow a part of the extreme religious organization? I gotta ask, right? That's my little conspiracy going in my head. I'm like, it doesn't make sense, right? Where are the other babies? And normally, before the religious extremist people took over, people don't really talk religion openly like that with people unless they know that, oh, okay, we share the same value, we share the same belief. But the fact that the nurse was so comfortable saying, "Oh, and the others are with God," it makes me wonder, was she one of them? We shall see. And then we go back to reality, and Aufglen notices that Offred is kind of distant and kind of tense, and she's like, "Are you okay?" And Offred reveals that the commander wants to see her alone, and every handmaid knows that if that's the case, it's not a good thing, and it's something that you should be really suspicious about. And Aufglen is like, "Oh my God, your commander? You don't know why? Maybe he did this to the one before you. Maybe she told someone about it. Let me see what I can find out." And Offred tries to discourage her, like, "No, it's too dangerous." And Aufglen is like, "It'll be okay. I'm sneaky." And then we see Serena Joy come into the kitchen, and she's like, "What are you doing, Offred?" And Offred's like, "I'm just helping Mrs. Waterford." And Serena Joy is like, "Come with me." And then we see her surrounded by Serena Joy and the other wives, and you can just tell there's an animosity between the wives and the handmaids. And I find it really funny. I mean, this is just my own personal opinion. Instead of being mad at the handmaids who are forced to do this and thinking of them as whores, because you have to remember, the handmaids don't want to do this. They are doing this because if they don't, they'll die. They'll get killed. They'll get sent to the colony. So their survival is based on how fertile they are, how, I can't even say submissive. This goes beyond just regular submission. This is like slavery. I said before, a baby machine, but you can tell that the wives feel some kind of way, but this is just my take on it. If it were me, I wouldn't waste my time being mad at the other women who happen to be handmaids, who have about as much control as I do over the situation, which is none. None of us have any control over it. It's really the men who run that society. It's total patriarchy, and not even regular patriarchy. It's almost like polygamy in a sense, except the handmaids are the concubines that they never marry. They just use them for reproduction. And then the wives are asking Offred, "Hey, what's going on with Janine's birth? Is it breech?" And Offred is like, "No." And they're like, "Oh, okay, we just have to have patience." And then they offer her cookies, and Serena Joy is like, "You shouldn't spoil them. Sugar is bad for them." And the other wife is like, "Oh, surely one won't hurt. It's a special day." And Serena Joy is like, "Offred, would you like a cookie?" And of course, Offred plays her role. She's like, "Yes, please. Thank you." And the whole time I was questioning, Why are they being so nice to her? And it's really not nice. They're being like real condescending, treating her like an animal almost. Because when she takes the cookie and thanks them, one of the other wives is like, "Aw, isn't she well behaved? I mean, what the hell? Are you talking about a dog? A cat? Like, she's not your pet. She's a human being." Oh my God, the show triggered me. I have no problem saying that. And then Serena Joy is like, "You can go now," as if, like, get out of my sight. And Carolina or Carolyn, one of the other wives, is like, "Ugh, little whores, all of them." And you see what I mean? You're mad at them when they have about as much control over it as you do. Where's that anger for the men that run that world, right? Like, that's my question. I don't know, maybe it's too logical, but hey. And then Offred can barely stomach that cookie. She had to eat their insults and the pretentiousness, and she spits out the cookie. And when she does that, it's like her spitting out their treatment. Like, no, I don't accept that. I don't want your effing cookie. I don't want your little handouts. I don't want your little, patronizing gifts. I'm still a prisoner to you guys, so what's the difference, right? And then we see Janine still giving birth and she can't handle it. It's getting to be too much. And like I said before, keep in mind, this is all natural. No drugs, no epidural, nothing to ease the pain. And they're going back old school with this, so everyone knows in the old days, no men in the room when women give birth. Look, this is me going on another tangent. If I'm giving birth, the only one I want in there is my husband, period. I don't want to be around a bunch of women screaming ritualistic chants around me, and oh my God, like that alone would just send me over the edge. Like, oh my God, like, oh my God, this show, but they know how to keep people watching. It's so triggering that, like I said before, it's like a bad car wreck. You can't help but look. And then we see Aunt Lydia with her sadistic self. And you remember Aunt Lydia, the same Aunt Lydia in the pilot, telling a rape victim that it was her fault. Yeah. And Aunt Lydia is like, "Breathe, girls, energy. Let him feel your devotion, and we will be rewarded. Hold, hold, exhale, exhale. Good girl, F. Warren. You are doing so well. We are so proud of you." And to that, I say, proud of what? Her being a baby machine? Like, no. And then Janine loses energy and she's like, "I need to walk." And they're like, "Okay, let her stretch her legs." But as soon as she stands up, she collapses. And Aunt Lydia is like, "Get her to the chair. Tell her it's time. It's time to push. 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 Breathe. Breathe." And at that point, Janine is surrounded by all the handmaids and the wives. And she gives birth to a baby girl. And now, this is the sick part of it all, okay? Now, all of it is pretty sick, but this is even worse. Everyone knows that when a woman is pregnant for the full 9 months, I don't care what they tell you bond with that baby. That baby eats what you eat, hears what you hear, picks up on your energy, good or bad, and feels what you feel. To have to carry that baby for 9 months and then see the baby taken away and sent over to another woman and her husband is traumatic. And in that moment, the writers did a great job letting us, the audience, the viewers, feel Janine's pain. And it's really a slap in the face because Janine did that hard work. She went through the labor pains, the natural labor pains, mind you, natural labor pains. But the wife reaps the reward and the benefit, and she didn't even have to go through an intensive labor like that. And the wife is the one that gets the privilege of naming the baby. Janine didn't even get to name her. The wife names the baby Angela, and at this point, it's like Janine doesn't even exist anymore. And then we see the past flashback of June and Luke in the hospital after they dropped Hannah off to get her first bath. And then June is looking at the clock, like, okay, Hannah's been gone a long time. Where's the nurse? She's supposed to be bringing my baby back. And then June gets out of the room and sees Luke coming towards her. And he's like, oh, do you need a snack? She's like, no, I have a gut feeling something's wrong. Where's Hannah? And Luke goes to look for her, but then the alarms go off in the hospital saying code yellow. And they don't really say what that means, but it means that there's an intruder and that there's been a stabbing and that somebody has a weapon. And the nurse that was watching over Hannah is in a pool of blood, dead, stabbed to death. And then June comes face to face with a female protester who's holding Hannah, baby Hannah, newborn Hannah. And you can tell that the woman, the protester, is not playing with a full deck. She believes that Hannah is her baby. She believes, like, oh, my baby, she's so perfect. It's like, no, that woman is a few eggs short of a dozen. She's not playing with a full deck. And at that point, all June can think about is, please, God, help me get my baby from this sick woman. Help me save my daughter. Do not let this woman go off with my baby. Oh my God. And June is like, she's not your baby. And the woman is like, oh, of course she is. Isn't she beautiful? And at that point, Luke comes up behind the protester and he wrestles the baby away from the woman. And the cops wrestle the protester down to the ground and Hannah is safe. But remember when Luke and June were going into the hospital, there were a bunch of protesters outside the hospital. This is my question. What group was this woman a part of? The group they're in now? Was this a sign of what's to come? That religious extremist group? And the handmaids are then shuffled back to their assigned homes. And Ofglen reveals to Offred, like, hey, no one knew anything about what your commander might want. I'm sorry, but that doesn't mean it's bad. But if he accuses you of anything, don't defend yourself. Don't explain, just apologize. They love to be forgiving. But what did he say when he asked to see you alone? And Offred reveals, oh, he didn't. He sent his driver, Nick. And Offglen is like, oh, be careful. A lot of drivers work for the eyes. And Offred is like, well, he said I shouldn't trust you. He said you were dangerous. And Ofglen is like, really? I mean, he's right. Trusting anyone is dangerous, especially a carpet-munching gender traitor. And then, meanwhile, in the big house, baby Angela cries and wails, and you have to remember, baby Angela was given to the other wife and the commander. And she's probably not bonding to the wife. And so, of course, Janine has to do all the dirty work, all the hard work, like labor, breastfeeding, stuff like that. And the Martha is like, are you going to be okay with him, with her alone? And Janine's like, yeah, I've nursed my son. I've done it before. And then she lets baby Angela attach to her breast. And at first, I thought this was going to go a different way. I thought it was going to be a situation where she couldn't get baby Angela to latch on, because that does happen to new mothers sometimes, where they want so badly to breastfeed because it's good for the baby, but for some reason, the baby just won't latch. And it drums up all these feelings of, oh my God, why can't I do this? I'm not being a good enough mother. I thought they were gonna go that way with it, but hey, they still did a good job with it. They showed how she was bonding to her baby, even though she's not the natural guardian. She's still the biological mother. And then we see Offred, and she's about to go and visit the commander, and her voiceover is very telling. It's very well written, filled with a lot of subtext. And she says, beyond the commander's door, is a place where women do not go, not even Serena Joy. What male totems are kept in there? I guess there may be something he wants from me that gives me hope, but I can't stop thinking about the girl in the horror movie who goes down to the basement when the light is out. The girl who thinks her boyfriend with the perfect hair is just playing a sexy prank. Justin, are you down there? And then she descends with a stupid smile to her bloody end. That girl is a fucking moron. Please, God, don't let me be a fucking moron. And then the commander lets her in, and he's like, close the door behind you. Sit down. Then he thanks her for coming, and he actually tries to lighten the mood. He's like, you can look at me. And Offred is like, but we're not supposed to. And the commander is like, in here, we might be able to bend the rules just a bit. I imagine you must find this strange. I know this will sound silly, but I'd like to play a game with you. And that just caught me off guard. Like, I was like, a game? At first, I thought he meant like a mental mind game, but no, he meant a literal board game, Scrabble. And I thought that was interesting because it's a lot of build-up. The whole scene, or not even the whole scene, the whole episode is built off of fear and anxiety that Offred has about, oh my God, what did I do wrong? What does the commander want? Why does he want to see me? What did I do? And it's just a lot going on. And then he ends up winning. And it's a good example. The whole time they're playing, there's no dialogue. It's just action, only relying on action and subtext. And it really shows that some scenes really don't need dialogue because the action will write itself and the subtext will speak for itself without any overuse of exposition. And then they finally end the game and the commander won. He's like 386 to 383. You're good, but I got you at the end there. We'll have to have a rematch. I'm out of town next week, but when I get back, see if you can squeeze me in. And Offred is like, where are you going? And he's like, DC. Nothing exciting but meetings. It's a date when I get back. Now I think it's time for you to go home. And Offred is like, thank you for the game. And he says, you're very welcome. Good night. And they shake hands. And when Offred returns to her room, at first I thought she was crying, but she was really laughing because she was relieved. She thought that she was going to get sent to the colonies. She thought that she was going to die, that her life was over. And in reality, the commander wants to play secret board games with her. Like, what? And I'm still curious as to what his motive is. The only thing I can think of in this regard is that he's emotionally bonded more so to Offred than Serena Joy. That might be his own form of intimacy, playing a game, because intimacy doesn't always necessarily mean sex. It could be something as simple as talking, opening up to a person emotionally, playing a game, doing an activity together. So I don't know. I could be reaching, but that's the vibe I got from the whole exchange. Because my whole thing is, why can't you do this with Serena Joy? The fact that it has to be Offred, that says a lot. And it also says a lot about the lack of intimacy within the commander and Serena Joy's marriage, too. And then the next day, Offred sees Nick, and her voiceover continues, and she's like, does he know what the commander and I did last night? Our illicit journey into the world of triple word scores? Does he care? I think he does. Then she sees who she thinks is Ofglin waiting at the gate, and she's like, Ofglin, I can tell her that the commander is going to Washington. Will she be surprised by the Scrabble game? She'll be glad I let him win. I know that much. She'll be proud of me for that. And then she opens the gate, and who we think is Ofglin turns around And it's another handmaid. Offlin's gone. Where is Offlin? Inquiring minds want to know. And then we realize that Offlin is no longer her shopping partner. There's a different handmaid in her place. And she's like, blessed be the fruit. And Offred is clearly shocked, but she says, may the Lord open. And the new woman is like, you must be Offred. Praised be. And okay, here's my little take on it. This was not a coincidence, not at all. They took Offlin away for a reason. For one, Offlin knew too much. For two, she and Offred were getting too close. And for three, they can't risk Offlin, quote unquote, negatively influencing Offred to start a revolution of handmaids and take down the establishment. Oh no, that would be too dangerous. And they took her away for a reason. And then Offred asks the new woman, has Offglen been transferred to a new post so soon? And the new woman is like, I am Offglen. And Offred is like, fuck. And then end of episode. And what that tells me, that new woman is being named Offglen, is that she's replaced Offglen, not just in position, but in name also. She's the new Offglen. So it's like, oh my God, Offred no longer has an ally. She no longer has somebody to talk to navigate this world. She no longer has somebody who can tell her what's really going on behind the scenes. So now she's even more vulnerable. And now she's in a position where she's having these little secret meetings with the commander. She's in a very bad spot. But yeah, you guys, this was a very good episode. Thank you guys for watching the podcast. I'm loving the series, but like I said before, it's extremely triggering because it's dealing with a lot of things. Like these women, if you look at them when they're walking around, especially the handmaids, they have no life in them. Their eyes look dull and lifeless. They're never really smiling unless it's some sick, sadistic ritual. And it's like, what kind of life is that? And it's really a story about getting your freedom back, getting your rights back, because nothing moves people more than watching the underdogs get their freedom back. But anyway, you guys, like, subscribe to my podcast, and be sure to click the link down below for a script coverage evaluation. And also click the other link if you want a free copy of my ebook, The Character Bio Playbook, in order to help you create bomb characters that are three-dimensional and complex. Have a good one, you guys, and I'll catch you in the next podcast.